Let the record show I was actually here on time for once.
I'm a little bit floored right now.
That's why I do it. I got to keep everybody, you know, on their toes.
Wow.
Sean, we still have two more folks and attendees who need to be moved over.
Are we having some Zoom TDs?
Yes, a few.
Okay.
Sean, there are two versions of the town count. Is that?
That's because my computer is on the fritz on the other end. So I'll disconnect that once the discussion
starts. We don't need it for anything, right? Okay. So I'm not sure. I think this may be everyone who was planning on attending, but.
Okay, we can get started. So fantastic, let's get started. So welcome everyone to the budget subcommittee meeting for April 17th, 2024. It is 5:05. I just wanted to meet the read the remote
recording in progress.
Start that again.
Nope, you're good.
Okay. So just for the remote meeting procedures, this meeting is being conducted remotely over Zoom. Attendance by budget subcommittee members will be remote and in remote attendance. Shall count toward quorum. The meeting may be broadcast live and recorded on ECAT. So let's start with just a quick attendance, roll call attendance. So Mike?
Petro present.
Jen Starr?
Star present.
Dr. Cabral?
Present.
Jackie Wiseman?
Present.
And did I cover everybody's officially a member?
I believe I am as well.
Oh, Connor. Connor Reed.
That's okay. Present.
Okay. And joining us also are Andrea Starszewski from Easton Public Schools and Wendy Nightingale, our town of Easton finance manager. Director, as well as Sean Dugan from the Assistant Town Administrator. So let's jump in. We have a pretty substantial agenda for tonight, and we'll start with the fiscal year 2025 budget discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Jen. So since the subcommittee last met, the Select Board and School Committee have met numerous times as we've each been working on various iterations to our budget. We published a preliminary fiscal 25 budget at the end of February, and we've done two change memos since then, and we'll have a third one coming out early next week ahead of the scheduled Finance Committee Select Board hearings, which are Wednesday and Thursday, the 24th and 25th. So the third change memo next week will balance the budget. I don't want to spend everyone's time reiterating everything that's been in the preliminary budget and the first two change memos. So I'll just kind of refresh where we were. The last one, which was issued about 2 weeks ago on April 8th, we started this fiscal year with one of the worst preliminary deficits that we've ever had. We are facing a lot of relatively extraordinary fixed cost challenges on both the town and school side. In our operations, kind of a cumulative impact of inflation showing up in our expenses, certain mandatory contractual services like transportation going up by double digit percentages. And then we're also seeing a lot of pressure in other areas categorized in fixed costs of a town's budget, like health insurance. As folks on this committee are well aware, the town's and schools have been able to do quite well controlling fixed costs in the area of health insurance. Not that we can necessarily take full credit for because we're in a GIC, but moving into that might have been almost 10 years ago now, has helped keep the annualized rate of growth there closer to 3 or 3.5% for healthcare, which is quite good. But we did not have a great year going to 25. Those rates grew closer to 10%, which for that budget is an enormous burden on the overall availability of funds for town and school operations. So just a really kind of tough budget year out of the outset. In addition to things we knew were coming, like the expiration of ESSER and ARPA going into 25, and a backdrop of continued underfunding of state aid, although there's been some improvements there since last week. So we started with a deficit over 3 million. We typically have a preliminary deficit when we start the budget process between 1 and 2 million. Outside of fiscal 21, when COVID hit, it has not been above 2 million on a regular basis. So we have worked backwards from there. The department started with level service requests, which is basically rolling over your existing personnel commitments and your collective bargaining agreements, paying for any contractual cost increases in your services or your outsourced agreements that you must have. And in both cases, those numbers came in substantially higher than we customarily see. And so the town and schools have been whittling those numbers back for a few months now. We also, in the second change memo, started projecting the use of stabilization funds, which is not something that we've had to do. We've built those accounts up quite a bit in the past 7 years or so. The stabilization fund used to be at about 1.5 million, which is not a balance that is sufficient for an organization of this size. Built that up to just shy of 7 million when you get to the contributions and the interest accruals. And so we're heading into some pretty tough years. And so it's appropriate and warranted that we start spending what I think is a responsible amount of that. Understanding with eyes open that it's one-time money and isn't a permanent solve. So where we got to as of change memo 2 last week or 2 weeks ago was that deficit had been reduced to about 700,000. So that's kind of where the state of affairs is as of the most recent written iteration of the budget. But we have a pretty good idea of how we're going to take it home between now and next week. And so rather than be coy and say that you have to be hitting refresh on your inbox, we'll just tell you. We did get some good news from the state budget, which is not a sentence we get to say a lot. I think it was, you know, Wendy and I were with Dr. Cabral and Andrea and the school committee on Tuesday last week, and we were awaiting the House Ways and Means budget. And so when the governor's budget was proposed this year, we were all pretty concerned that the proposal started out with a minimum aid of $30 per pupil. I know I'm a broken record here, but in the off chance someone's watching, that means that, you know, for a $50 million school district, the state will allocate roughly $100,000 in new revenue, which is a quarter of 1%. The past couple of years, the House and Senate have bumped that up to 60, which is appreciated. MMA, Mass Superintendents, Town Managers Associations have been pleading for minimum aid to be increased to a minimum of 100 per pupil for years and years and years. Being a minimum aid $30 per pupil community for 15 years is the number one contributor to our structural revenue deficit. And so starting the budget at 30 per pupil and with the 9C cuts and the financial challenges the state is now finding itself in, we did not have a lot of hope, but we were pleased to see the House Ways and Means Committee budget proposal last week, proposing minimum aid at $104 per pupil. I don't know why the extra four, but we will take it. So that that's an increase to Chapter 70 of about a quarter million, which moves that account into a year-over-year increase of $354,000 or 3.3%, which is very helpful. If minimum aid was $100 every year and had been for 15 years, we'd be in a pretty radically different financial posture than we are. But we are certainly appreciative of that. So we will be programming that into the budget. As part of that, they cut unrestricted aid down to 1%. And the net there is still another $156,000 in state revenue compared to what we were hoping. That moves state revenue in the House Ways and Means budget to Easton at a roughly 3% increase over last year, which still is not keeping pace with our costs, but is much better than we were below 1% in the governor's budget. So that's good news. There's risk associated with us proceeding with this assumption. This is just one iteration of a budget. The state very rarely, or in Wendy, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if the state ever has their budget done before Easton's town meeting. Massachusetts is kind of notorious for having one of the latest operating budget adoptions in the entire country every year. So we will program this figure, which is consistent. We usually take the most current state budget and carry it forward to town meeting. The Senate could propose a lower number. And if that happens after our budget is balanced, we'll need to deal with that in the fall. But given the scale of challenges we're facing, I think it's the right path for now. So that is some positive news. So that's $156,000 more of revenue. On the expense side, on the town side, we expect to cut approximately another $180,000 out of our department's requests, which will is well below their level service request came in over 6%, which is a bit atypical for us. There's some cost factors in there that are not personnel related, but things we have to fund, like increasing our IT cybersecurity spending. Also, SEMREX assessments are increasing, which we knew would eventually happen, and are still cheaper or more cost effective than local dispatch was. But those take up a large amount of our increase. So we're not funding level service heading into fiscal 25. We will be reducing some of our total FTE headcount through attrition, not through involuntary layoffs at this time, but still moving backwards in that regard. But we just frankly don't have a choice. School budget was proposed last week. Dr. Cabral, I don't, if you want to just touch on that, where it was with school committee. I know we've all been working together, looking at utility savings and things of that nature. That's come down about $200,000 from the 6% placeholder that we were working with.
Sure, thank you. The schools are in a similar situation as Connor. You may be hearing a little bit more chatter than usual around the Commonwealth from the schools, because it's kind of a perfect storm of expenses. Out-of-district students last year, out-of-district tuitions for students that were unable to educate within Easton rose 14% in 1 year. In the last dozen or so years, it hadn't raised more than an average of 2%. So that was shocking in itself. And then this year, it's raising almost 5% more on top of the 14%. Those tuitions, as you may have heard in the past, can be anywhere from $30,000 per year per student to $250,000 per year per student. So 14% and then a 5% increase is shocking for us. Also, our contractual salary obligations kicked in a year late as we were negotiating. We're going to start negotiating again next year. Our elementary enrollment has increased, which is a great thing. But our transportation at the same time also increased by double digits. We have also seen an increase in our McKinney-Vento and DCF transportation obligations. Those are students who are homeless or are in the custody of DCF, and we are legally responsible to transport them wherever they may be housed temporarily, which can be as far as 50 miles away. That is hundreds of thousands of dollars a year that, along with special education, are now completely unpredictable of when a student will be in that situation. We are also seeing some reductions in grants. Not only are the federal grants that were related to COVID, ARPA and ESSER, drying up, but the entitlement grants, we are also facing a loss of just one entitlement grant. We've already faced a loss of over $150,000 in 1 year. We haven't even gotten the other entitlement grant numbers yet, and we may not until late in the summer. So that's very difficult to predict as well. Typically, when the first grant, Title I grant, goes up, the others also go up. We are nervous that since it's been cut more than half in 1 year, the others might follow suit. And that makes up millions of dollars of our budget every year. In order to mitigate the effect of that, we have utilized every other grant we have. We've moved people into grants, which we are not entirely comfortable with doing because, as I just noted, grants can end in 1 year or be cut significantly without notice. We have also leveraged all of our revolving accounts, and so they'll be used for our increasing enrollment in kindergarten and pre-K. They'll also be used for all of our facilities costs because we have completely shut off our requests for capital for everything in the next 3 years except for security and technology. So we need to absorb all of our facilities costs in our revolving account. We also are preparing for the possibility that the free lunch and breakfast program, which is funded every year, if there is appropriate funding. Last year, we didn't find out that there was appropriate funding for the program until, again, late August. And so preparing for that, we did a study, and that study showed about $150,000 deficit to food service program if they didn't run. They did, fortunately, but this budget that we're putting forward is predicated on all of those things kicking in and things like lunch also being provided. So it's important to know, and I'm sure Connor will talk about this a little bit more going forward, but because we are putting so many of our expenses into grants and revolving accounts that are finite and unpredictable, it is really setting up a very precarious situation. We've been reducing and cutting and maximizing efficiencies for years, which have got us to this point. So for this year, we were able to reduce over 2%. We just, in talking really at the 11th hour today with Connor and Wendy, were able to realize some efficiencies in our utilities costs at Blanche Ames, which we only now know after 1 year in the building. And so our percentage is down to approximately 5.5%, 5.57% for this year, with all of those extraordinary increases. Again, don't mean to be negative, because we are at a balanced budget right now, but I just want to make sure that everybody is aware that what we've been saying for several years is actually getting closer, and the resources we're using now are finite, and just bringing that to everyone's attention as costs may increase. And if they do, there's only so much time that these resources will keep us going.
Thank you, Dr. Cabral. And I think, you know, on that note, one of the things that we wanted to highlight in this meeting, we said to everyone, you know, what Alicia's referring to is, it almost sounded like white noise for folks, but we've said the phrase structural revenue deficit for so long. And it you know, sometimes probably seems like crying wolf because we always identify that as a challenge in the budget cycle. And then we get to a point where the budget's balanced, you know, from an accounting standpoint, and we move on and we make it through the year. And we've, I think all things considered, done very, very, very well for quite a long time. We've had some tight years and some tough budgets, but we've been able to continue to provide a pretty high level of service on both town and school side for years, despite having the minimum state aid, you know, a kind of never ending growing list of unfunded mandates, as noble as many of them may be. And while none of us can say declaratively the future will look like X or Y, it seems pretty clear that, you know, moving into fiscal 25, 6 and 7, that we're going to be in a really challenged spot where we have for a long time said, and it's just a matter of kind of mathematical fact, even when we had smaller departmental increases than what we're seeing this year for the town and school, you know, years of 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5, our revenue growth has been predominantly through property tax. State aid has been 1% or less a year. Local receipts have grown healthily, but they're only 8% of our total revenue. So it's important, but it, you know, they could grow 10% and it's still fractional compared to, you know, what's going on with state aid. And we're just reaching a point where, you know, the limits of Prop 2.5 minimum aid and then double digit percent increases in fixed costs are just going to collide. And there's only so much rearranging and innovating that you could do to outrun the gravity of that. And that's not to say we're going to give up. We're going to keep doing what we do quite well. But, you know, I think the appropriate thing to do looking at fiscal 25, even in its balanced form, is that it's a 12-month budget. We should not, and as Dr. Cabral is making clear, and I'm trying to reemphasize without sounding too doom and gloom, is there is not currently, particularly if we have a year like this again, if we have another year with 10% health insurance increases or transportation increases, the prospects of us being able to maintain the current level of services in the town and schools are very, very slim. And so we, thankfully, with some of the adjustments we just talked about, are not having to leverage our stabilization fund as much as we feared, but it is still pretty substantial. And so that's the one piece that I didn't talk about yet, is we are tapping into some of our rainy day funds going into fiscal 25 in a way we have not had to for quite some time. So we, under the town's policies, don't use more than 50% of the prior year's free cash in the operating budget because it's just not a good practice to do so. And we have been able to do better than that in a lot of years where we're not necessarily using all the way up to that 50%. But this year we will be getting pretty close. So you're looking at 1.5 million there. We've been closer to 1 million or 850,000. So that's a meaningful increase. And we're going to end up at about 750,000 in stabilization, which is about maybe 11 or 12% of that balance. Our policies indicate that we shouldn't spend more than a quarter to one third of the stabilization fund in a given year. As a maximum, I would not recommend doing that because whatever you spend this year, you could pretty reliably count on needing another next year to keep that, or you'll have to cut. And so if you're doing, you know, 25 to 33% a year, you're just going to blow through that in a couple of years, which you don't want for a whole host of reasons, but not the least of which is we want to continue to maintain a strong bond rating as we continue working through a lot of capital upgrades that have been authorized. So that's a challenge for sure. I provided the structural revenue deficit report to everyone, I think, through their various committees. I know that's a later item on the agenda, but before getting into the forward-looking piece where Wendy's going to share some forecasts to put some numbers to what Dr. Cabral and I are saying as far as fiscal 26 and 7, I figured it would be a good time for me to stop and have a sip of water and see if anyone has any questions or feedback on any of that information or any of the reports we've provided.
Connor, if you don't mind, I wanted to add one very important piece before any questions. And that is that the school department has been, I haven't been contacted. No one's actually called me or sent me an email so that I might answer with factual information, but rumors have sort of percolated up to central office that we are eliminating positions this year. We are not laying off anyone. No, I have not announced any layoffs. I have not planned any layoffs. I have no idea where that's coming from because unfortunately no one's reached out. So I don't know exactly if I'm getting the right questions, but I have not proposed, nor do we plan any layoffs, and the balance seems to be budgeted. The budget seems to be balanced at this point. Obviously, the school committee still has to vote on our budget, and the town still has to vote on the budget. So those two things can influence the budget. But other than that, there are no layoffs. So I just want to make sure I'm saying that really quickly, because if anyone ever has a question of that nature, they really should call our office so that I can let them know. I don't know where those things start, but I can't end them if I'm not contacted directly.
Thank you, Dr. Cabral. Thank you, Connor. There's a lot to take in over the past few minutes. I want to open up to the rest of the committee for comments, if anybody has anything they'd like to say or reflect or any questions I'd like to ask. You know, it's a lot to process, and we're kind of in a multi-stage process here.
Sorry, this is Jackie. I just wanted to thank you for the reports that, you know, they're very detailed and they're very easy to understand, especially the structural revenue deficit report. That was very, very useful. So thank you for taking the time and putting all that information together.
Thanks, Jackie. I appreciate that. Yeah, we wanted to put it all in one place so it could just be kind of updated over time and used as a reference to budget memos rather than committing 10 pages of every budget memo to that one subject. So hopefully it's helpful.
Thanks, Jackie. Mike or Jen, any questions or comments?
No, but nothing that hasn't been said many times before.
Thank you.
My dog in the background has comments, apparently, though.
Yeah, same as Mike. We are, I think we've been kept very well informed all along the way throughout the process. So this is information that thankfully we've already seen before because it is a lot to digest. But thank you.
And I'll just echo what Jackie said. And thank you for the preparation of the materials around this. It was really helpful and just keeps us well informed and allows the discussion to stay focused and you know, fact-based, which is really, really important. It's really, yeah, I feel like we've almost, I was reflecting on this earlier, reading through things. It almost felt like we'd gotten lucky, but the reality is we haven't gotten lucky. We're in the position we're in now that we get a year to kind of figure out the next year because we've been so careful about how we think about our financial principles and the approaches we use to you know, town's resources when it comes to this. So, you know, I think huge kudos to Andrea and Wendy, Connor and Dr. Cabral for the work that goes into this, and Sean as well for the work that's gone into this. To, you know, as we're watching communities around us spiral into pretty scary places around cuts in the, you know, over $10 million, it's scary. And we're not there yet, but I think the understanding we all have here is that we have to be aware that that hard year is coming faster and closer than any of us would like. And it's kind of like when you're living this life where you're like, oh, I'm one accident away from this thing happening. It feels like we're living that reality now. Even as we see this $700,000 gap we're discussing now, it still feels like there's variables at play that are a bit nerve-wracking, even coming down to deadlines and such. So thank you for everyone involved. And I think it's really important for all of us as we think about this work in our committees we are on, you know, looking ahead, how this lens is going to be really important for everything we do in the coming months and over the coming fiscal year. So that's all I have to say. There are no other comments. Connor, the next item is a status update on capital budget.
Jen, if it's all right, I would just ask before moving off operations entirely, absolutely, if Wendy could just, Wendy, do you have the information that we had for school committee last week or?
Yes.
Okay. So there's been some slight updates to this based on some of the stuff we talked about, but we include forecasting in our budget book every year, but budget book's not always done before town meeting just because there's so many components to it. But what we wanted to do was quantify, with all the normal caveats everyone on this committee is well aware of, right? The farther out into the future we go, the more we lose confidence in the forecast, right? Because there's too many variables. But Wendy pulled together basically a model here where you can take our trends that we've been dealing with on the revenue and expense side the past few years and forecast them out. And the area that's really important to focus on is highlighted in orange, which is our reserve use. And you'll see that, you know, we're pretty substantially, in part because ARPA is expiring, we knew this was coming, but more so than what we had hoped due to fixed cost increases, leaning on local reserves in fiscal 25 to the tune of about 2.3 million. And then going into 26, 7, and 8, you'll see a pretty substantial amount programmed from stabilization each year. And, you know, assuming if we take the budget growth, even I think a 5% increase to fixed costs a year, which is optimistic because we're looking at closer to 8 this year. And then you take the current town and school budget growth and just copy paste that, you're looking at, even with 2.8 million in reserves in 26, a deficit of 1.7 million, right? Which at that point you can't really get out of reserves, would have to be out of cuts. So there's obviously assumptions baked into that. If we have a good healthcare year next year, then that takes a lot of heat off of that. But I think really this is just trying to put some forecasting to what the more kind of narrative or qualitative approach that Dr. Cabral and I have taken today of saying, you know, we know that these things are coming, but this is what that looks like when you start to kind of itemize it. So Wendy, I don't know if there's anything else you want to highlight in here. I don't know. Is that assuming 104 per pupil every year?
It is. It is. So I figured what I would do is I would sort of mirror, you know, this year's or fiscal 25's budget assumptions. And what it really does is it really just highlights, even with putting these numbers in, just how challenging our position is going to be, because we're looking at 104 in, you know, minimum aid and significant stabilization fund use over the next 3 years. And we're still running deficits. And what this really illustrates, if you go down, you know, further to the bottom, you look at the year over year percentage increases, it's all, you know, it's clear. The problem, it's a revenue problem. I mean, revenue growth at 3% is not sustainable, you know, without cuts, you know, to budgets. It's not a spending problem, it's a revenue problem.
And I think if you scroll down more, Wendy, this shows that even if we were to do this, even leaving aside the substantial deficits we would need to eliminate, if you go all the way to the right on one of those orange columns, you see the ending stabilization fund balance of about 3 million, which is less than half of what it is right now.
Right.
So this is assuming a substantial drawdown on that account. And even still, you have those deficits. And so I think, you know, you could play around with this. You could put 3% mm-hmm. in for town and schools, and maybe that drops the deficits down much more. But that, I mean, with the cost pressures we're facing, a 2 or 3% increase is functionally going to be a cut to the amount of service or staff. You know, at the end of the day, if that's the revenue that's available, then, you know, we're going to have to make those hard choices. But I think, that's why we wanted to just have this on screen for folks to take a look at and engage with, if you'd like, because not trying to beat a dead horse, but just want to make sure we're being clear about the scale of challenge we're facing.
Right. And this also does make certain assumptions, you know, for the free cash certifications. So it assumes that on July 1st, 2024, we'd have a $2.5 million certification. That does go down in the successive years, which is what we're anticipating, that the certifications will get smaller as we push those revenue estimates further. And, you know, we just have minimal increases in budgets with inflation and everything, that those margins are going to narrow, and you're going to see that in the free cash certifications.
Two quick questions on that. to both of you. We've seen the free cash certifications decrease over time, and predictably so. And I'm trying to remember, we had a good reason for it, why we expected it to come down. Was it the fact that the GIC was not going to keep giving savings? What was the reason why the free cash was expected to come down over a number of years?
So, go ahead, Wendy.
Well, do you mean in general, or do you mean with these estimates that we're showing?
No, I mean in general. What we're seeing in 23, 24, 25 here is bearing out what we've talked about in the past. I'm just getting old and my memory sucks. So right. I'm trying to remember the reason why we said that was coming down the pike.
Well, one of the things too is just the whole expiration of federal funds. So before COVID, we were looking at free cash certifications of around like 1.8 million. And then, you know, with ARPA funds and revenue replacement funds, and just that period of time where spending kind of came to a halt, it led to these larger free cash certifications. But I mean, even looking at 23 and 24, you know, we went from 4.1 to 3.3. So it's, you know, we're going to be back to that point, you know, before COVID. Right.
That makes sense. Thank you for the refresher. Sorry, Connor, go ahead.
So that's a part of it. And another aspect, as Wendy touched on, is that when we have really tight budget years like fiscal 25 that we're facing, we forced is the wrong word because it makes it sound like we have no agency, but we are pushed much more by the finances to estimate higher amounts of revenue than we otherwise would at this point. So a great example of that, if you look at the change memo number 2, one of the things that we're doing is upping our new growth forecast based on the expiration of a TIF at Shovelworks. We don't know exactly what that value will be because of the way those values are assessed. It's different than a single family home. We feel a reasonable degree of confidence in that, but we wouldn't normally increase growth by 200,000 at this point,
right.
would rather be pleased with a higher than estimated growth in the fall. But because of how severe the deficit was, we made the judgment call to go with that now. So now if things go well, you stay in the black, maybe by a small, you know, 4-digit number, a 5-digit number. When margins were not as pressed, that would be a $200,000 contributor to free cash, right? Similarly, local receipts, there are some restrictions from the Department of Revenue. I believe, Wendy, correct me if I'm wrong, you cannot forecast next year's local receipts in excess of the prior year's actual collections. Is that right?
That's true.
And so you have those statutory restrictions, but
got it.
You don't want to, you know, juice your numbers, so to speak, to use a technical term, and then end up in a position where your collections are 100% and your revenue is 50 bucks over forecast. So as the budgets get harder and harder to balance, those margins just get tighter. And so then you have less free cash at the end of the year.
You know, again, thank you for that and for the extra. That makes complete sense. The other question I had is it's a very minor question, but from a curiosity standpoint, and I suspect as these evolve over the next year or so, we'll get this kind of question more than once. The how much is inflation factored in here, either in the analysis of prior years or in the forecast for future years? How sensitive are we, I would imagine, particularly in DPW, but anywhere, to inflation?
So speaking just on the town side, I think some of that is shown in making an assumption of a 4.25% growth factor each year, because that's higher than what we have done in the past 7 years.
Yep.
Still not, you know, 20% year over year, like certain things in the private sector have done. But speaking, I'd imagine similar for the schools, but I'll let Dr. Cabral address that. But for us, that's, you see that when you, a forecast of 4.25, 4.5, that's a higher rate of growth than town departments have grown at pre-COVID inflation.
Has there been anything different in the school? No. I'm guessing, I'm wondering, have we directly observed it already? Things that we look at and go, yeah, that part there, that's inflation. And do we expect to see in the out years sort of a ripple effect? Obviously, we're protected because we have collectively bargained agreements, but as time passes and those start to need to be renegotiated, people are going to look back and say, well, gosh, there was some pretty high inflation there for a while. We've got to factor that in. Do we expect that to make these deficits even worse?
So being sensitive to our union partners, we'll make this an academic question. And
as it's intended.
Yeah, in a vacuum, yes. We are overwhelmingly human service organizations, right? The large amount of our costs are personnel. And outside of a fixed cost budget, right? That's where we've really seen a lot of that inflation hit on insurance premiums, on liability premiums. You're seeing it in utilities, but utilities for the town and school are still a fraction compared to the cost of our people. So yes, in a vacuum, whatever collectively bargained cost of living adjustments you end up with will have a huge impact on the operating position. And so I'll flip your question and point out that what's driving this is not labor cost of living adjustments. So for the town unions, and I believe the teachers union, the COLA package in a 3-year window that we're heading into, which ends in fiscal 25, is 2.5, 2. So it's not as if folks had their COLAs tagged to the CPIW and we're getting 9%. So we have all 7 town unions collective bargaining agreements expire at the end of fiscal 25. Will need to be renegotiated for 6, 7, and 8. I believe teachers unions on the same cycle. I don't know about the rest, but Dr. Cabral can speak to that, but we have a substantial amount of our contracts coming due in fiscal 26 as well.
Three of our 6 bargaining units will need to renegotiate in FY 25 and the other 3 in FY 26.
So all 13 in the next 18 months.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I can add in, Mike, just inflation related. There's actually an amendment being pushed or being advocated for in the House relating to the inflation cap that's put on Chapter 70 funding. So right now, or I think the cap is, I don't want to misspeak, but it's something like 3%, say. And I think they're pushing to increase that to up to 4.5. So there's the state calculates, you know, a real level of inflation. It's a measurement taking at a specific point in the year. But for Chapter 70 funding, regardless of how high that number is, it's capped right now. So that, you know, artificially lowers that whole Chapter 70 equation, which over time it may contribute to putting us further away from crossing that threshold to where we actually qualify for Chapter 70 funding. Like, so right now we're, you know, it's part of that equation that puts us further and further away from getting out of minimum aid. Yeah. We are advocating to our reps that they sign on to that amendment. Who knows if it'll go anywhere, but hopefully we'll get some result there. And then part of that is pushing also for that to not just be a one-time thing, but to have a correction effect that would go into effect over the next couple of years. So,
right. Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the clarifications.
Any other questions or comments on this? This is very sobering, and I use that word a lot lately, but there's really no other word for it. Just seeing it in this context, it really drives home the point that of what's potentially coming for us if we don't start thinking now about plan forward. So, Connor, anything else before we transition to the next item, the capital budget update?
No.
Okay. And we'll turn it over to that.
Sure. Thank you. And I apologize for the late email on it, but folks have seen various iterations of the capital plan, if at minimum for their own departments. Wendy and I met with Capital Planning Committee last Wednesday to go through their process under the bylaw of them doing their ranked prioritization. We will have a recommendation for the capital plan for town meeting next week, Thursday night, as part of our budget hearings. Again, not to be too much doom and gloom, but a lot of the pressures, Mike, you asked about inflation, where we're really seeing that is the capital budget. In vehicles, in facilities improvements. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure. The budgets are obviously interrelated as free cash certifications shrink. That's less cash on hand for cash financed capital. We want to be sensitive to how much we are borrowing for, particularly as we embark on the police, fire, public works project, although that's exempted debt. So ratings agencies look quite differently at that because the revenue to pay those notes is guaranteed. But it's still a balancing act. And so there are some pretty substantial capital projects in the next few years on both the town general fund side, the school general fund side, and then also in our enterprise funds. So the total amount of requests for this fiscal year across town, school, and enterprise was $14 million. We can obviously not fund all $14 million of that. About half of that is from enterprise fund, a lot of it coming from water. One of the items, actually the largest item in the capital program that'll go to a town meeting this spring, is a $5 million upgrade to the $15 million Red Mill Road water treatment plant, which is getting turned on like this week. Red Mill Road is primarily to treat iron and manganese for wells 3, 5, and 7. But when we were designing and building that plant, since that was happening concurrent with the construction of 3 PFAS plants, which are now done, we oversized Red Mill Road in anticipation that one day either the state DEP or the federal EPA would tighten PFAS drinking water regulations. We didn't think one day would be today, which is kind of a theme of all these financial challenges we're facing. So that rule actually was just published by the EPA last week. And so, again, thankfully, the treatment plant is large enough that we'll be able to add treatment for 3 wells for $5 million rather than $12 million, which is what we spent on wells 1, 2, and 4, but that's coming. So the good news is we'll be well ahead of that federal regulation. There's a multi-year implementation period, but that's pretty extraordinary. I mean, that puts the tab, so to speak, for PFAS treatment at $17 million in 3 years. So that's funded through enterprise. That doesn't impact our general fund borrowing capabilities, but you know that will obviously lead to increased water rates. You know, on the town side, some of the other larger items, authorization for an ambulance. So in addition to inflation hitting the bottom line of what we're paying for these vehicles, the lead times are enormous. Certain, particularly fire vehicles, always have long lead times because these are super specialized vehicles, but you're looking at up to 3 years now on an ambulance. The upside of that is we don't actually, Wendy, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't actually issue the debt until delivery.
Close to payment time.
So you authorize the borrowing and that gives you the ability to sign a contract and get the wheels moving, no pun intended, but you don't actually hit your debt service for years. So another item that is going to be pretty large. So planning and economic development is not a town department. You usually see gobbling up a lot of the capital budget. The Office of Dam Safety on the state level is really pushing for more improvements to dams around the Commonwealth. Unfortunately, they're not pushing that with money. So we will be paying for a lot of that. We'll go after grants where we can, but there are at times it can be frustrating for folks who see that the town and the schools win all sorts of grants. We do a great job there, and you can't just kind of allocate it against what you want. There's, for instance, a ton of climate resiliency grants, including ones that we've been able to use for flood mitigation through wetland restoration, but you can't use flood mitigation grants to keep dams from falling apart, which seems counterintuitive, but I don't write those rules. So one of the larger items you'll see on the town side, general fund is $585,000 for Old Pond Dam safety repairs. And then over the next 5 years of the CIP, you'll see quite a bit from the planning department, a few million in dam repairs. And so again, we'll go after grants where we can, but that's just another kind of item that we're getting more pressure from the state to get on top of. Makes sense. We obviously want to keep dams in good shape, but there's very little money attached to it. So that will strain our capital capacity as well. Dr. Brown, if you want to just touch on the school security project is ongoing. There's a multi-year borrowing plan there that we're all working together on, but.
Yes, we have two issues, as I noted a little bit earlier. One is the technology. Now that we're one-to-one since COVID, we are getting to a point where the computers need to be on a new procurement plan. And so the technology, we do have technology in our operating budget, but not enough for the volume that we very quickly got up to. The second item is the borrowing for the security project. It is an upgrade for the three schools other than the new Blanche Ames Elementary School. It's a three-year project with borrowing of $1.5 million this year, but then the following 2 years, $4.5 million each. That is currently in design, and that is why we have limited our requests for any other capital expenses for at least 3 years.
So that is the status of where the capital budget is. Again, I emailed out, and it's on the town's website, the prioritized list. You'll see a lot of deferrals in there. Particularly in DPW fleet replacement, which is unfortunate. They need it, but those vehicles, between the price of them and just what our borrowing capacity is, we can't afford to replace what we need to. And Wendy and I will go through, now that we're nearing a balanced operating budget, we'll go through this closely and finalize our recommendation for funding in the spring, as well as things that'll be coming back in the fall. And Jen, I'm happy to take any questions if anyone has any.
Any questions? Doesn't appear to be the case. Just thank you to everybody who in the Capital Planning Committee and everyone who participated in pulling this together. I know a lot of work goes into being very mindful of the items that are prioritized and the impacts it has on the discussion around trade-offs and such. And none of this is taken lightly. It's definitely very, very well vetted and discussed with a mindfulness toward cost and also keeping our bond rating in check and all the other factors that go into it. So thank you. Anything else around that item, or can we move on, Connor, to the next?
Sure.
Okay. So the next item, if no one has any questions or comments, is the annual town meeting warrant. As a reminder, town meeting is on May 20th, 2024. So coming up very quickly.
Sure, thank you. So everyone should have been, if you're on the town meeting distribution list, every couple of weeks we send out an updated draft. Town meeting is May 20th, 2024 at 7 o'clock at OA. We have a pretty short warrant, frankly, for an annual town meeting, although the content is very dense. 17 or 18 articles, I won't go through them one by one. You have a lot of your typical annual authorizations and things of that nature. We'll obviously have the operating and capital budget. And as we've done in the past few years, I will ask the finance committee and the select board for their recommendations or positions on these articles at the end of your second night of hearings next week. You have some CPA funding articles on the on the docket that have been recommended across the board by folks. Those are great projects. I don't think I was any questions about any of them. And then we have the only real zoning, although I don't know if a street acceptance counts, so I won't misspeak, but we have the MBTA communities zoning on the docket as well, which is really important to the community in a variety of aspects, one from a kind of housing supply standpoint, but also, you know, germane to budget subcommittee, the standing of communities needing to comply. And if they don't, at minimum, losing access to grants that Easton has received multiple millions in over the past few years for infrastructure advancement, for incentivizing growth where we can to try to pump up those new growth figures to help kind of keep the structural revenue deficit at bay as long as we have. So a really important zoning item for the whole community for a variety of reasons, but again, also relevant to this committee. The planning director, Stephanie Danielson, and the planning board have done, I think, and I know they went to every committee, I think every committee, period, more than 20 presentations on the subject. They've gone to a lot of community events and handed out information. They've done Q&A forums, and they've really tried to get the information out there. There's a lot of misinformation around the MBTA Zoning Act. So we have a dedicated webpage for it, which is easton.ma.us/MBTA zoning. And I know that planning department is prepping a handful of charrettes and other community forums between now and the 20th. So folks who want to engage with that and ask their questions can learn about it in advance of town meeting. So that'll be an important discussion that night, as well as I anticipate, obviously, the operating budget. So I don't know if anyone has any questions about any of the articles on the warrant, but we usually have it as an agenda item just in the event that there are.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Just note that it is a very compact but very dense warrant for sure. And your point about the MBTA zoning, it's really important people show up, and the stakes are really high, especially because we're talking about the financial impact of this and loss of potential grants and such. So I hope folks will go attend, listen to the meeting, and make sure they understand it before voting, because as you said, there is clearly a lot of misinformation out there on that one, but it's really, really important to the community. Okay, if there are no questions or comments, we can move on to the review of the structural revenue deficit report.
So I just included this here for the sake of open meeting law. I knew we would touch on it in a budget discussion. I touched on it earlier. I don't have a presentation prepared. I'm happy to answer any questions from anyone on this. But we've put this on our website. We've shared it with the relevant committees. And again, the goal here was just to put a lot of kind of reference material that highlights, you know, why we are in the position we're in a way that doesn't take away from being forward facing, looking at future budgets. So we published it as a draft because there's a lot more we could probably put in here, but I want it to be timely. So if anyone has any feedback, I'm happy to hear it. Also happy to let folks get on with the night. If you don't want to talk about structural revenue deficit, my feelings won't be hurt, but figured I'd just put it here.
Any questions or comments? It was extremely well written and comprehensive, so thank you for preparing that. I assume most of this content will be covered in the presentation at the town meeting when the budget is presented, or at some point.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Which I know it's not the answer I'm supposed to say.
No, that's okay. I think we're moving target territory right now, so that's okay.
Yeah, this actually came up with a school committee last week. I mean, most folks here have been to a lot of our budget presentations and a lot of town meetings, and some years those budget presentations have been an hour long with a ton of Q&A from voters, and some years voters have asked to just vote a budget without a presentation at all. So it's... we'll certainly plan a presentation. We're not going to, especially given what we're talking about, that what we don't want to have happen is budget just gets adopted, no discussion, no presentation, and then come fiscal 26, which is likely to be very difficult as we're talking about, people say, wait a minute, this wasn't discussed at all. How did we get here?
That's a key point, Connor. That's exactly it in my mind. Sorry, I interrupted you, man. Sorry.
No, that's fine. But I think the past two town meetings for fiscal 23 and 24, collectively the presentation was like 4 minutes because that was the feedback we were getting. So I don't want to necessarily rubber band in the other direction and say it's TED Talk time, but I do think, you know, we want to make sure we're being very intentional to highlight what we've talked about here, which is this is a good thing that it's balanced. It is a good thing we got to balance without having to resort to some of the draconian measures that other communities, a lot of communities are having to do. And that's thanks to the work of everyone on this committee, the school committee, select board, finance committee, our department heads, our staff, and voters for going along with these recommendations, because we've had those tough town meetings in the past. I'm still figuring that out. I'm trying to get the presentation for next week squared away, and then we'll try and find a balance that's informative without keeping people there for two and a half hours on one article.
Yeah, it'll be a good opportunity to make sure folks haven't clearly understood that the way we were able to carry through this year is not likely to be the scenario in the future, given the state of current business operation. So, okay. If there are no questions or comments for anybody, then we can move on to our next and final budget subcommittee agenda item, which is the vote for the minutes of January 31st, 2024 and March 6th, 2023. Can I have a motion to accept?
Motion to accept, DePietro.
Second, Reed.
Great. So we'll do a quick roll call vote. Connor? Sorry, I got you in the wrong.
Sorry. Caffeine. Reed, yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Jen?
Star, yes.
Jackie?
Wiseman, yes.
Dr. Cabral?
Cabral, yes.
And Stacy, yes? Okay, and that is it for our agenda. I'll defer to Sean, Connor, and Dr. Cabral on this. When should we aim for setting up our next meeting? Should we do that now, or should we kind of see what is needed? I don't know, cycle-wise. So
traditionally, the subcommittee hasn't, once the budget is balanced and presented at the hearings, usually you don't have another meeting between then and town meeting because the work, to a certain extent, has been complete.
Yeah.
I'll certainly defer to the committee, but barring any surprises of a hearing, which can always happen, I don't know if you need to proactively book one right now.
Okay. I think we can hold off on that since we have a very full week next week with a lot of information that'll be coming forth. And then from there, there'll be some more stages of information. So I think it's fine to proceed and without scheduling one. And if we need to have the group come together for some reason, we always can. So with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, DePietro.
And a second.
Star, second.
Okay. And roll call vote. So Connor?
Reed, yes.
Mike?
DePietro, yes.
Jen?
Star, yes.
Jackie?
Wiseman, yes.
Dr. Cabral?
Cabral, yes.
And Stacy, yes. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a good night. See you all.
See you all next week.